I always said it from the beginning, food is the way to the heart. You know, as simple as that. You want to bring people together, you feed them. It's like any Thanksgiving meal. We made Thanksgiving several times throughout the year, not just on Thanksgiving. We had potlucks, we had barbecues, we had bonfires, as you mentioned. We rejoiced over food, and it wasn't really a rejoicing. It was just more of conversations once again. It hadn't always had to deal with just unionizing. We just made a space for workers to feel comfortable. And once you got workers feeling comfortable, you have their attention. And now they look forward to seeing you every day. They're like, oh man, where's the bonfire at? Oh man, where's the ALU yet? We're not there. So when you start to get that type of feedback, you know that you're doing something correct. And you know, that's why we fed our coworkers as much as possible, and we still continue to do so because we know food is the way to the heart. And Amazon obviously lacks that. You know, they're the Grinch who stole Christmas, and you know, we're the good guys.
Yeah,
Angie Michelle, go for it.
definitely the food. I remember the day I joined, I sat by the tent and I had a slice of pumpkin pie and some snacks, right? And so I think that food is definitely the way to the heart. And then also being considerate of the different cultures that were in Amazon. And so targeting different ethnicities and nationalities, and actually taking into consideration that we all came from different places. So, at one point we were serving African fried rice. At one point, one of our team members, Kaz, he had got empanadas from a Spanish restaurant. And I think that us, having these different ideas that targeted different cultures. Whether we were a part of that culture or not, it definitely let the workers know that we were thinking of them, in more ways than one. And then also, when we had these potlucks and stuff, music too. Like, so we made it enjoyable and we made it fun while getting the information out about what the ALU, how the ALU wanted to benefit us as the employees of Amazon.
Michelle, do you have any non-food related? We got the food points.
Non-food
That's us.
related. Definitely, I think organizing for me was fun. I enjoyed it very much. What I did is I tried to like single out people that no one else is really speaking to. Like, let's say someone that's like really, really quiet and you see them and they don't speak to anyone. Single out like that one person. Also, people that have like disabilities. There's people that are in wheelchairs. There's people that have they can't see very well. There's all type of people. There's people that are deaf or they're mute. And I would try to talk to those people also because sometimes those people are kind of ignored, especially by management, and that's a problem. That's inside of Amazon, and that there's a huge disconnection between management and the workers. And that's a complaint across the board with every single worker. It's like there's this huge disconnection where you feel like you're not even in the same building, with your managers. Like there's no conversation, there's no good morning, how are you? How are you feeling today? I mean, none of that. So there's really like no sense of like a work culture inside of the building. So it's like you have to create your own work culture. And then for me, it was a little bit easier and it was fun because I've already been at that facility for 3 years. So I pretty much already knew a bunch of people and I was like a familiar face. Because you would see me either, coming in the building or out of the building, or you see me in the break room, you see me, upstairs, downstairs, in the elevator. So you're like, okay, this is a familiar face. I've seen this woman, many a times, and she's with the ALU, and she's a familiar face. She's been here for a while. So they would feel, for the most part, they would feel comfortable speaking to me, when I would go up to people and, try to speak to them about the union. And try to see, what, they if they're for the union, if they're against it, let's have a discussion. Not try to be like too forceful, like, okay, you have to vote yes. Like you have to say yes, like because that's what management was doing. They're telling everyone to vote no, and I didn't want to come off, with that same kind of energy. Like I wanted to just be like, okay, let's discuss it. Let's, you know, if you're with it, if you're not, let's discuss it and why, and you know, what can we do to try to persuade you?
That's really helpful. I have a follow-up question. Where did you have those conversations? Because
everywhere.
Can you just describe that? Because it seems like it might be scary having that inside the fulfillment center or the warehouse. Can you just talk through, were people scared about talking? How did you break through that fear factor?
People were definitely scared about talking, but again, like we have our own separate work culture from management, because like I said, there's that disconnection there. So there's a lot going on as far as people that have been, I'm speaking of people that have been there for the long term, like people that have been with Amazon over a year, because the thing is that Amazon creates this environment where they don't expect you to last over a year. If you make it over a year as a level one associate, it's like a miracle has happened, because they really don't expect you to last that long. So they're like, yeah, you know, I give this person maybe a year and a half tops, and they're out of here. So when you're there for like 2 or 3 years and somehow you find some way to flourish in this kind of an environment, you know, the managers really don't realize it, because again, there's this disconnection. So we would speak everywhere. I'm like in the staircase, going up and down the stairs, and in the elevator, in the parking lot, in front of the building, on the bus, at St. George, at the St. George ferry terminal, because I take the bus to St. George and then I get on the Staten Island Railroad. Or there would be some people that I actually saw in random places in Staten Island. Like I would see people at Costco's, on Forest Avenue, like outside of the facility. And it just like the conversation just happened anywhere at any time, pretty much.
Thanks. That was all really helpful to you all. Appreciate that. So we'll move on. Touching on one of the pieces you mentioned earlier, Amazon, like most workplaces these days, there's a lot of divisions, right? People are fractured along a whole different range of lines. So I was hoping you could all talk about that, give some details about what are the divisions you saw? How did you work to overcome them? And could you describe a specific conversation about maybe somebody who you had to work on a while to try to get them to come over, that maybe they were opposed or really hesitant, and what it took to move them? So that's the question. Would anyone want to start us off? Chris, you want to start us off?
Yeah, sure. You know, Amazon tried to make this a racial thing in the beginning. You know, they had one of their union busters, Brad Moss, who came from Alabama. He was one of the first ones to be exposed because he talked to a group of workers, predominantly white, and one Hispanic woman in there in the group. And he said some racial remarks about the ALU. He called us a bunch of thugs. He called us a bunch of Black Lives Matter protesters with no experience. And, you know, he tried to make it a racial thing. He said that, you know, he came from Alabama and the union wasn't no big deal. And, you know, once again, that we're a bunch of thugs outside, you know, outside the building. And they Amazon ran with that. You know, they don't stop the rumors once they start. I can guarantee that there's nobody in there saying, oh, no, that's not true. Once the rumors start to spread, it's like high school. They get to everybody's word of mouth. It's real fast. And, you know, we noticed that they tried to paint us out as, you know, once again, just people that just had no experience, that just came off the streets, that's trying to steal everybody's money with union dues. Even to the point where they even told everybody that I'm going to buy a Lamborghini. That was the latest one. They even made a sign with an ALU car decal on the sign with somebody driving this convertible, which I guess was supposed to be me. And they also, you know, Michelle and Angie can speak on this as well. They had signs in there with, you know, that were very racist. They had union busting signs that had, you know, people wearing their hat backwards, you know, wear a darker color than the other cartoons that they use. And it was just very racist what they were trying to do and still continue to do as well, because the union busting hasn't stopped.
Angie, Michelle, do you want to add on that piece?
Yeah, I mean, basically, one of the ways that we, you know, try to bring everyone together, although it wasn't really an easy task. Just create our own culture within the ALU. And, you know, everyone thinks like we have like these tactics that are worth thousands of dollars, but basically we're just being ourselves. And so, you know, connecting with the workers, there was times where, you know, we would sit outside by the bus stop and play loud music. We would connect with the young workers that way. Or I even remember one time, an older woman inside the building, I call her mom now, you know, I brought her tea, we sat down and talked. And so just connecting with the workers any way we would treat our own family. We would treat our grandmother, we would treat our uncle, we would treat our brother and our sister and our mom. That's the way we kind of got through that age gap thing. Even with different cultures, you know, having organizers that spoke different languages, even if it was one organizer, it could, because in theory, there weren't hundreds of us. There were only like about 15 towards the end. And so, it was a very tedious, you know, organizing ideal. However, what the ALU did and how we created our own culture, it worked for us, and it worked for us in a way where if you didn't hear about the ALU, you still seen who we were. And so when we approached you, you knew that we weren't like, you know, a third party at this point. At this point, you knew that the captive audience meetings were just lies. And at this point, you knew that whatever we were telling you, you know, it wasn't information that wasn't true. If anyone was to give out misinformation, it was Amazon. And so, yeah, just building our own culture. And that's how I seen it. Yeah.
Angie, can I ask a follow-up question on the youth piece? It seems like a lot of ALU core organizers are pretty young. And so I was just wondering if that's true, if you have a sense of why that is, and then how were you able to connect to older workers? Because that could both be a strength and maybe a limitation, right? If people see it as just like a young crew of workers. How did you deal with the age issue?
Well, I would say the reason that, you know, the average age of a ALU member is 27 years old. However, we have people that are 50 years old, maybe a little bit older, and then we have people that are probably like 20 years old, right? But I think the reason for that is there was a lot of people who, you know, they wanted to get involved with the ALU, but because Amazon, the pay is not as well as they make it seem, a lot of the older people, they do have some jobs to provide for their family. So, you know, with that, it was only so much that they can do. You know, sometimes they come in the break room and they would help us talk to our coworkers. But as far as coming on their off days and dedicating the time that we were dedicating, it was very difficult for them. I've spoken to many of my coworkers who are like, you know, I really want to organize, but I have a second job. I don't have anyone to babysit my child. You know, I have to take care of my grandmother. And so, you know, and in theory, another thing is that if these people need to maintain their second jobs, we still have to fight so that maybe one day they wouldn't need a second job as much as they do now.
Thanks. Michelle, can you add in on divisions, whether it's the racism that you're subjected to or youth or any of these things? What's your take on divisions, how you overcome
them? So as far as the active or the captive union busting classes, they were so racist that it was like out of this world, because they even had like the figures that they would have, like let's say they would have like a manager was like a bright yellow and orange figure. And then the ALU representative would be like a dark purple with a dark blue figure. And I saw that like on the screen and I was like really shocked by it. And you have to understand that, you know, what happened is that actually completely backfired on Amazon, because it's like you're showing us these racist images, but the majority of your workers there are like the majority are like 70 to 80% African American. Am I correct, Angie and Chris?
Yeah, I mean, it's like 30% of Hispanic, 35% Black, you know, so altogether, right. We're talking majority Black and brown workers.
Exactly. So when you show something racist like that to people of color, because even myself, like I, you know, when people see me, they just see like a very fair skinned woman, but I do identify as a woman of color first and foremost. And I do have people in my family, like my brother, my cousins, my uncles, that look like Chris and Angie. And they don't look like me, you know, as far as complexion is concerned. But that doesn't mean that I don't identify as a person of color. So, like, it's weird because they would look at me and, like, kind of have, like, this weird look on their face. And it's just like you don't, it's like you don't get it. Like, do you not understand that this is racist? Do you not understand that this is like morally wrong?
What did it take to move some of these hard to move people? And I'm sure that was difficult. Maybe Chris, could you start us off again? Because obviously, again, you know, Amazon tried to demonize you.
Yeah, you know, yeah, I definitely, I had to flip a couple people because they just hear through the grapevine all these things about me without even speaking to me. And I think after every conversation they have with me, they walk away saying, you know, whatever they hear, it's just not true. You know, I'm a nice guy, you know, respectable. I respect you. You know, I'm calm. Everybody know I'm always pretty much calm, unless we're partying or having fun. And, you know, that's what I wanted to show people, that I'm a real human being just like nobody else. I'm no different. I'm an Amazon worker just like yourself. I was on, I was a picker. I got hired as a picker. You know, yes, I was a process assistant, was more on the management side for several years. But at the same time, I never forgot where I came from, you know, and that's what I used to, people that work underneath me that organized with us, that is, you know, definitely been around with me since day one, like Derek Palmer, you know, can speak on how I was as a supervisor in the building. I was the same way. I'm the same way now. You know, I respect everybody, no matter, you know, what position you are, what level you are. And I think that also helped, you know, debunked a lot of the things that they heard about me and also about the union itself. You know, they tried to, you know, once again, tie me as a human being to the union and how the union is going to be formed. And they don't realize that every decision that we make is a democratic decision. You know, I don't never make a decision without consulting with the team and voting on it, you know, whatever decision as far as the budget, as far as food, as far as, you know, doing demonstrations, a rally. We have several meetings every single week where we discuss these things and how we want to organize. And, you know, for me, you know, I like to be, you know, having workers come and challenge me and ask me tough questions, because that made me stronger as a leader and as an organizer. You know, I definitely told people, you know, they're going to go through this honeymoon phase. You know, when you get hired by Amazon, you're excited. It's a big name company. You see all the commercials, how the job looks great, the benefits, and you get on day one. It's always paying better than its competitors. But then you go through a honeymoon phase where, you know, 2 weeks in, it could be 2 weeks, 2 months, even 2 years. You realize that something needs to be done because this is not what you expected. You know, whether it's management getting on you, whether it's management not getting on you or not even having conversations with you, getting overlooked for promotions, being on station 10 to 12 hours, not being able to cross train, being cross trained too much when they use and abuse you and throw you anywhere because it's business needs. All of these things come to a wall, and you hit that wall when you're like, you know what, enough is enough. And sometimes we will have people walk past us for 2 or 3 months. Angie was probably one of them. It took her a while to just finally say, you know what, let me go have a conversation. And not just her, it was a lot of workers who were like that. 2 or 3 months, they wouldn't even take a flyer. They wouldn't take a pamphlet. They wouldn't say hi. But then that one day that they realized that management is not on their side, they come right out and sign up. And that's all I waited for as well.
Yeah, why don't we go to you, Angie? It's a good question, actually, because you got involved in October, I believe, of last year, right? So
I got moved one day. I remember vividly leaving work early because I was exhausted. And the VP, Connor Spence, he had came up to me and I had just missed the bus. And every time I miss the bus, I always think about how when I first started in 2018, Amazon promised us shuttles. And so I had missed the bus and Connor came up to me and he gave me the whole, you know, the whole thing about the ALU and what was going on at the time. And at the time when I first signed up, we were doing signatures. The ALU were doing signatures and, you know, he's like, you know, we're about to turn in our signatures. You're going to be one of the last batch of signatures. Help us make history. And I'm like, you know what? I just missed the bus. And if Amazon had a shuttle, I would have been probably home by now. So yeah, I'll sign it. And yeah, that's basically how I got involved. As far as flipping people, oh man. Certain days and certain people, the experience is different. And so like, there will be some people I'll probably have like a 30-minute convo with in the break room. And, you know, they're like, oh, well, everything sounds great. Like, this is what I'm looking for in the union. I'll think about it. I'm like, you know, I'm here anytime you need me. I'm always here. And they're like, okay. And then I'll see them the next day or maybe a week later or both times. And I'll try to give them a new piece of literature and update them. And they'll be like, girl, keep that paper. I'm voting yes. And so, like, you know, sometimes you don't know because, you know, everyone doesn't express their emotions the same way. So you're thinking maybe that person is, you know, they're not as convinced as you would want them to be, or, you know, they still have concerns, but they just don't, you know, they're just not hooray about it like I am. So, and then there's also been times where, I remember this one time I was speaking to a guy about my age. I believe he was 28 and he was telling me how he, you know, he was in the military and he believes that, you know, a lot of the workers don't work as hard as him and that we shouldn't get a raise because that would mean that everyone, you know, would get a raise. And he felt like he should only get a raise because he worked there for like 4 years. And so, you know, I explained to him about, you know, how everyone's role is different and how we're not only fighting for tier one employees, but we're fighting for tier three employees. And, you know, he's like, I'm not really voting for the union. I'm like, okay, well, I'm right here whenever you need to speak to me. And so, like 2 weeks later, we're outside giving out lanyards and stuff. And he comes up with one of the organizers named Castillo. And he's like, guess what? The guy who I spoke to, he's like, guess what? I'm voting yes. And I'm like, no way. And he's like, yeah. He's like, you softened me up a bit. But then I spoke to Castillo and I'm all in now. And I'm like, and that's the power in numbers. And that's the power in the different personalities in the ALU. And so like that moment right there, like a week before the election, that really made me proud of myself. And it made me proud of, you know, the organizers that we have.